college football's coming up, so let's have a little fun with that. We'll bring in a fan favorite of 1080, 105.1, the Fan Sports Network. I know Isaac Rupp loves this man. I know Danny Morang loves this man. I love this man. We all do. It is Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Dave, thanks for joining the show, amigo. I want to ask you this question. It almost feels like to me that people like you who nerd out on this stuff so amazingly, you almost prefer the preseason than when games actually start.
No. I love it when the games start. Right? And now, here's the thing, though. This might be a little different, though, perception-wise, is one of the happinesses I get out of it is trying to find out where everything went wrong.
Mm.
Right? You know, the pursuit is always coming up with a formula or data that shows, you know, breaking something down, or, you know, how can I help a Dan Lanning with going for it on fourth down or going for two, or, you know, changing the way a game outcome. But so often the data points to X and then Y happens. Right? And so, it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
why did that? Right. So it's like, I know this sounds crazy as heck. I enjoy it when I'm wrong because it makes me stay on the blackboard and try to find answers.
Yeah, I think Bill Connolly agrees with you the way he does it, too. It's like, we don't want to predict. There'd be no fun if the data told us what was going to happen. It's more fun when we figure out how the data was so wrong.
Exactly. It is. And I mean, that's a weird way to look at it, but I can't wait to be wrong in week one.
Bartu, you sent me something you just popped out here. It kind of fitting alongside that, the looking at the Big Ten, the coach cues and kind of, I would say, indicative qualifiers for the 18 coaches. And I want to make sure I get the numbers right here because I think for most people, they're always like, well, what's the sample size? You know, what is this actually like? What's it based on? You've got your upset tell here, 16 seasons of drive data, 403,335 drives, 16,111 games. So this isn't like, well, you know, over the course of, you know, two seasons. Like, no, man, there is a disgusting amount of data to where you always want more because that's it. You're able to filter out for noise. But you're profiling the Big Ten coaches and some of the cues that come along with those. And you've got some, I think, some pretty distinct outliers with the likes of Matt Rhule on one end and Sig on the other. But what did you learn through this process and some kind of indicative statements or tells or cues, as you call them, in this profile?
Yeah, well, what I was looking for is one of the questions I always have is what makes an upset, right? Mm-hmm. Is there some sort of pattern in football that we can go, hey, if A plus B plus C, this game's on upset alert? And so I started digging into it, and I filtered out all of the games except for those when you're a favorite. Now, you know, I know for some programs, that's not a lot of football games. But when it comes down to upsets, I was looking for, as a fan, when should I go, uh-oh, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so I started with Oregon. You know, I'm an Oregon alum, and so, you know, Dan only has 8 losses. 3 of them are blowouts. And so I'm like, okay, we got 5. How many of them are underdogs? And so when you look at his losses as a favorite, there's only 5 of them. And there's 2 things that stood out. Now, what stands out for Dan doesn't stand out for everybody. But mm-hmm. for Oregon, and if you're a Duck fan and you can find the article online, is if you're trailing at the end of the first quarter,
something didn't go right. And if it's almost like if the script gets altered early, the plan B, C, and D aren't mm-hmm. maybe quite as well connected as plan A.
Exactly. So five losses that were close all trailed at the end of the first quarter. Okay, when he's leading at the end of the first quarter, hasn't lost a football game. Mm. Now here's the other thing, though, on those to qualify the ones where he's trailing, his offense and his defense is also not working. Normally, in a Duck win, first quarter, offense runs about 22 plays in the first quarter. Defense faces about 20, pretty balanced.
Mm-hmm.
In all the losses, the defense faced 26. The offense only ran 15. Massive flip, right? So not only are you behind, your defense is on the field too long, and your offense isn't staying on the field. So, you know, it takes a double whammy. But once that's avoided, that first quarter, pretty tough to beat him. But everybody has a little bit different tells inside those numbers.
And that's actually where I wanted to go with this, because you've got, you know, the longest tenured head coach in major college football in Kirk Ferentz, and he's got a tell in there. I think it's pretty indicative of his style of play over the course of his career at Iowa. And it's Iowa football to the extreme. It's taking care of the ball. And you have it lined out as if that second turnover happens, well, there she wrote. Like, how many of these tells do you see among these 18 coaches where they become so synonymous with stylistically of who they are and the identity that they've created?
Right. It was amazing when Kirk's popped out, and the system was literally like this complete byproduct of his control, offense, and defense. And he runs such a tight, in the phone booth kind of game mentality that – the turnovers are what destroy him. And so now you and I both know turnovers are a lot luck. You, mm-hmm. you don't really create them, you know. I mean, you try to, but everybody preaches it. So you're trying to minimize the damage. So with Iowa, yeah, when that second turnover against his team pops up, he's in hot water. And I can't remember what his record was, but it was a ridiculous amount of his losses come with 2+ turnovers.
I mean, when you take a look at that, when we had you on last week, we were talking about the idea of momentum. How much of the momentum of these coaches also factors into their individual cues and tells?
In fact, well, momentum is the biggest thing out there. You know, you look at Dan, when he has momentum, he's lost 3 games in his career. Mm-hmm. When Kirk Ferentz has momentum in his favor, he's lost 9. In his career. Cool. Nick Saban, when he has momentum in his favor, lost 5 games total.
Wow.
You know, Kirby Smart's lost 1. Ryan Day, when he has momentum, is 77-0.
So
yeah, it's incredibly important.
So basically, if they have momentum, does that become the, like, even if their cues here pop, the momentum will trump it? Like, did you see any correlation, or I shouldn't say correlation, how many outliers existed, or I don't know if you've looked at this in the sense, how many outliers have existed out there that pertain, that still hit with their cues, even with momentum? Do those even exist?
Good. That's a great question, right? Because these upset cues, I literally started looking at it in the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't run it against momentum to see. Now here's the thing. Look at some of these things, okay? Think about the momentum and game control. You're down on, you know, you're for Oregon, you're trailing. You're Iowa, you're down on turnovers, right? These are all negative game control, all negative momentum episodes that are going against your team. And so what I've found is that all of these things, the thing at the bottom is momentum, and everything else contributes to it, whether it's turnovers, lack of explosive plays, creating explosive plays, being behind in the first quarter. I think what we'll find is all these losses are in parallel with not having game control as well.
Mm. It's Dave Bartu of the College Football Matrix. Dave, can we keep you for one more?
Absolutely, sir. Just cruising down 84 towards Pendleton right now.
Excellent. I love it. See, he's going to Idaho,
there
too. We'll take a quick break. Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. I want to ask some questions about top 10 teams that will fall out of rankings if data suggests that, and why the hell we have polls to begin with. But we'll toss it to Casey first with sports. Dave Bartu joining us, College Football Matrix, for one more Seggy. As football is near and dear to our hearts here at The Fan, your home of the Oregon Ducks. Don't forget that. You can catch every single game right here on the Fan Sports Network. Dave, I wanted to ask you something. You were talking last segment about kind of, you know, the prediction part is fun of it, is part of the fun, but you're more interested these days in figuring out where things went wrong. Let's use the moniker that seems to continue to run its course, that a top 10 team will inevitably finish unranked. Is there a way, how are you able to try to combat that? Because, you know, Florida State famously a couple years ago, I think it's 9 of the last 10 years of top 10 teams falling out. Is there any way to predict that, or is that part of the trying to figure out where upsets come from?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you can predict it exactly, but I think we can raise some red flags.
If you raise red flags, I think a lot of people are talking, you know, maybe Texas A&M, maybe Ole Miss, hell, maybe even Indiana. What does your data suggest where that could go?
Well, you know something, A&M I think is a great one. Okay, let's start there. Is the biggest red flag to me is in 2025, that was the best offense they have had this century. And their offensive coordinator is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a brilliant player, brilliant coach, now the head coach of Kansas State. And Mike Elko went, this is not safe for work, so cover your ears, kids. Mike Elko went next man up. Oh, I hate saying it, okay? You're a top 20 recruiter. You shouldn't be going next man up. I just don't like it, right? And I think maybe my PTSD comes in with Mark Helfrich, right? Mm-hmm. They went next man up, and then we saw four straight years of regression. So not only did they go next man up, they went with a wide receiver coach that's never called plays. Never called plays. So you got a new offensive coordinator, never called plays. I just don't like it at all. And last year, A&M's defense was bad. It was 56 in the country. It was the worst playoff defense that was out there. They did get rid of their defensive coordinator. Kentucky took him, and now Kentucky has the worst defensive coordinator in the SEC. So I think A&M is, even if Colin stayed as the offensive coordinator, I still think they're due for a slide. Maybe not out of the top 25. Are they in the top 10 right now?
Yeah, number 8 in both coaches and AP.
Yeah, I'll sell that, dude. I will sell that with an inexperienced offensive coordinator all day long. I know they got the returning quarterback of Marcel Reed, but you know the question is how good was he relative to the play caller? Was it more about the play caller fitting it to his strengths or vice versa? I'll fade A&M, and it sounds like you're willing to fade A&M with me.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I want to stick with rankings for a second. Look, I'm a firm believer that rankings, there should only be one. We don't need college and we don't need coaches and AP. I would love to see a ranking system similar to what you do in terms of just let the data speak for itself, and then we can eyeball any sort of misses that we need to. But do these rankings play any part into what the computer spits out, or does your computer spit out pretty close to what these rankings provide?
Oh, like the preseason crap?
Yeah.
look at it. We're talking about it.
True. That's why I'm asking. Like,
right? We're talking
yeah.
about it. Now, does it have any impact on the playoff teams? No. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we ranked Kent State number one and Georgia unranked, is that going to play itself out?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is. It always does. It always does, right? And so as long as we understand the AP Top 25 and the coaches poll and all this, it's just a bunch of BS for fun and entertainment. That's cool. It's when fans think it actually has an impact. Now, it may have a recruiting impact, a narrative or something like that, but I think with NIL money, a lot of that's gone away too. So, you know, the only rankings that ultimately matter are those at the end, and those are part of the playoff committee. None of these preseason things have any correlation or any effect. People like to go, well, Georgia was number one to begin, and now they're number one with the committee, so it's correlated. No, they just happen to be really good teams. You know, there's only so many really good teams, so I don't worry about it. But it's fun water cooler discussion as long as people don't take it seriously.
Dave, let's put it back in the backyard and look at Oregon. The talent profile they have is probably one of the best they've ever had. The way the schedule is lined up for them, I think it's more favorable than most of the other teams in the top 10. When you look at Oregon this year, is this a – I know this era of college football, it's so much more wide open, and the data suggests that, you know, anybody can do it in a sense if they get it right. But when you look at Oregon right now and their profile, coaching, and player profile – is this kind of a make-or-break season for them? Is this the time that they have to win a national title?
No, it's not a make-or-break season for them. Number one, the data doesn't show anybody can do it. I know people want to point to Indiana, but you know something? That's the greatest anomaly in my lifetime, and I don't expect it to be repeated. But at the same time, too, is understand Indiana did that with the highest graded staff in the country. Mm. Okay? Offensive coordinator, head coach, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator. That was the number one group coming into 2025 last year.
Mm.
Okay? So they had a huge ceiling of coaching. Now, for Oregon, no, it's not make or break, right? Because look at Dan's number. Look at him. I look at him. I profile him. Number one, we talked about momentum, mm-hmm. okay? His momentum generation is about 84%. Kirby Smart's at 86. Nick Saban's at 88. His momentum generation is very, very good.
Dave,
can
you explain momentum, what you mean by that?
It's a series of combining the offense and defense over time in a game to control a game. So it's not just like a play where you hear on the radio, you know, on TV, it's like, oh, that score changed the momentum.
Right.
Maybe a little bit, but true momentum, true game control is a series of about 12 to 20 plus plays that really control the game. It's not just one event. Dan is excellent at manufacturing it. It requires team working together. It's not an offensive thing or a defensive thing. It's a combination of the two. So Dan is very good at manufacturing it. He's elite. He is a semi-elite closer. I wish he only had one or two losses, not three, but I'll give two of them to being too aggressive on fourth down. If he punts and ignores the negative EV play inside his own 50, he probably only has one loss. He is excellent at survivor. And that means when you don't have momentum, how well do you win? Mm-hmm. Kurt Cignetti is good at it. Dan is elite at it. Do we have top five talent each and every year? Yes, we do. Okay, so this isn't make or break. It comes down to me is the talent's going to be there. You have the head coach. 100% believe in Dan, and I think he's going to get better as he learns as he goes along. So the ultimate question comes down to the coaching. Right? Cignetti had it. Ryan Day had it. Kirby Smart had it. Saban had it. All of them had really high-level OCDC combinations. That's my concern this year.
You lost your OC.
Yep. We went next man up. You lost your OC. You lost your DC. Now, on the DC side, you have an experienced defensive coordinator in Hampton who had a top 25 year at Tulane. I really believe in Chris Hampton's ceiling. It projects very, very high, but I'm still holding my breath. But I do believe in his potential there. The flip side, Drew Mehringer, the offensive coordinator, okay? He's been an offensive coordinator for 1 year, and it is one of the 10 worst seasons graded as an offensive coordinator in the last 16 years. Mm. It's horrible what he did at Rutgers, okay? So now I know a lot of fans are probably going, but Dante Moore. I get it. If Moore is that good, he will elevate him. Okay, just like Leavitt did at Arizona State. He elevated Marcus Arroyo, who without Leavitt and without Justin Herbert is a terrible offensive coordinator. So can Moore do it? We're going to find out what's stronger, Moore's ability or Drew's ability to learn and adapt and try to perform. That's what scares me this year, and that's why I say don't put all your eggs in one basket, because to me, Oregon is not a complete national championship team because of that uncertainty at coordinator.
Something fascinating that popped out of your coaches in the Big Ten is the idea of Pat Fitzgerald being on the hot seat already at Michigan State. Bro just got there. Is that more indicative of kind of the tumultuous state of the Spartan program, or is this Pat Fitzgerald maybe not fit for a head coaching job anymore?
No, this is me trying to be a jerk. Is what it is.
That's not very nice, Dave.
Oh man, you know something? Look. Sometimes I love predicting things. You know, and this is one. So this is what I'm really trying to see way out in advance. Right now, hear me out. Here's why he's on my hot seat. Okay, Michigan State fan still thinks D'Antonio and that playoff team's walking back through that door. Okay. So their expectations for this guy is really high, okay? Now, Pat Fitzgerald, for his career, slightly above average head coach. Solid, okay? Solid. Really good on the road. But 4 years before he got fired from Northwestern, he lost his defensive coordinator, Hankowitz.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue top five most underappreciated coordinators in the last 20 years. Unbelievable defensive coordinator. When you got to sit down and talk to him about his base defense and defending the red zone, blow your mind. Absolutely blow your mind about his simplicity. So as soon as Hankowitz left, Pat Fitzgerald went in the tank. And I'm not talking about a little bit in the tank. I'm like talking Mike Loxley bad in the tank. Okay? Hit three of his last 4 years at Northwestern were fired, fired, and fired. He was horrific. He was 11 games under average coach at Northwestern in his last 4 years without Hankowitz. Okay? Guess what? He doesn't have Hankowitz, and his staff isn't very good. I know it's too early to say he's on a hot seat because technically he's not, but I really think of all the guys that got hired, I think Michigan State took a massive risk. I think he's enormously overrated, and he's got to really, really prove it to me over the next 3 years for me to start believing about him.
I know you and I are kind of in lockstep as far as the idea of like who can actually win a national title. And I don't want to go down that path, but who is a team that is not getting the love they should be based on their coaching profile, their talent profile, their schedule, everything that kind of plays into everything there? Who is that team, whether it's a top 25 team, top 40 team, that you're looking at that based on everything that you've seen should outperform all of the public side thoughts or debates around them versus what the actual data says?
Man, I'm an eternal pessimist, and so I like talking bad about teams. Like, why is Steve Sarkisian such a bad head coach?
Why is Michigan the most overrated program?
It's amazing, you know. And I want to believe in Lane, but first year head coach in the transfer process. Lane's worst year at Ole Miss, first year. FAU, first year. First year's really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the talent and the coaching profile, there's really nothing in the ACC. You got Notre Dame and Miami. You got really good staffs. You got really good talent. In the Big 12, there's no talent there at all. There's nobody to discuss in the Big 12 competing for a national title. I don't see it. The Texas Tech has a great staff, and I love it because I helped put it together. but talent-wise, still not there. And Cignetti as a head coach is just a different level of wizard, dude. It's just amazing. So I think it still comes down to all your elite talent plus Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's really any other dark horse out there, even though people want to believe there's another Indiana. I don't see the staffing and talent combination that's at Indiana right now, at Indiana the last year, that's out there today that I'd say, yeah, I actually really believe that's a dark horse to win a national title. Playoff team, that's different. But national title, no, I'm not buying it.
It's Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Dave, we'll get you out on this. One question, something that Danny and I don't quite understand. I'm just going to throw two programs at you, the hype behind them this year, and I'm curious if the data supports it or not. One is the Michigan Wolverines, and the other is the Washington Huskies. Big years expected for both of them, especially up north in Seattle. With the Damon Williams drama, they lost a ton of weapons to the draft, and then Michigan, which still hasn't found the forward pass, they seem a little overhyped for me. What does your data suggest?
Are they both top 25 right now?
Yes, sir. Top 20.
Oh, Michigan, I'll throw them out right now. I'll throw them out right now.
Danny and I don't understand it. That Michigan team is not very good.
Well, look at all the drama around the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Right? Look at all the discombobulation and the turnover, and it's just it's a mess.
We love Whittingham. Is it just stock in Whittingham?
I think so. And again, first-year head coach at a new spot. You know, I think we're expecting average here. So, you know, maybe 7-5, maybe 8-4. You know, I think 9-3 would be incredibly exceptional for them to stay in the top 25. I really, really do. I think it's just a lot of growing pains with a fully new staff, a roster turnover. I'm not buying it, especially in a very, very well-coached Big Ten. There's just a lot of potholes, maybe not a lot of talent, but there's a lot of teams out there, like an Iowa. Mm-hmm. Is Iowa in the top 25?
Oh, shoot. I just had it up.
I'll flip Iowa and Michigan in a heartbeat. Now, with Washington quietly has one of the best defensive coordinators in football. Ryan Walters is awesome.
Iowa's 22.
Okay. So, again, just drop Michigan, but leave Iowa in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think with Washington is the defense is going to carry them. You do have a returning quarterback. Jed Fish as a play caller is pretty mid. He's in the 60th percentile. I don't buy the hype. I don't think he's that good as a head coach. He's pretty mid as well. But then again, an average offense with an elite defense, I think what you're betting on here is you have a top 25 scoring efficiency defense last year. Can that become a top 10 or 15? So, and you look at the schedule, it is favorable. I could see them squeaking out 9-3, Jed catching a little bit of a lightning in a bottle. But am I betting them as a team that's going 10-2, making the playoffs? No, I'm not doing that. I think the staff isn't good enough. I don't think Jed Fish is good enough. But if Ryan Walters can get hot, he's proven it. He can put up a top three defense. So to me, if you're betting on Washington at 10-2 and in the playoffs, you're putting all your eggs in that defense.
He's Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Thanks for joining us, buddy. Travel safe. We'll catch up down the road.
Take it easy, guys.
Thanks, Arthur.
Dave Bartu, College Football Matrix. Always fun to chat with him. He's always got a ton of stuff to go. I'm telling you, Michigan doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense.
I don't. The way he phrased that, flip Michigan and Iowa. Remember when we did the schedule, I was like, the only hesitation I had with that was that it's playing the Big House.
Exactly.
Like, that's the only, if it's in Iowa, I'm taking Iowa to cover. Neither team can throw the ball, but one of them doesn't have the stank of Michigan over it.
Yes, one of them has decided not to throw the ball. The other one's just like, what's throwing the ball? Yeah. We come back, closing arguments to send you on your way. 105.1 The Fan.